Page 397. 1. A trivial but recently common misunderstanding assumes that everything that has two sides is therefore dialectical. We will leave aside the complex issue of whether predicates stands in a potentially dialectical relationship to an object, whether a copula is dialectical, mediator, and so on. Whether two entities stand in a dialectical relationship to each other is entirely an empirical question, particularly in the framework of such Marxian modalities as latency and tendency, juxtaposition, alliance, quantitative relation, abstract or remote opposition, static opposition, mere mental construction and division, for example, odd and even numbers, nulls, thous, and so on, can be modes of coexistence without dialectical negation, contradiction, or mediation. Such abstract contradictions are undialectical by definition. For example, that methods and material were not dialectically related in traditional theory was precisely what the critical theorists objected to. Abstract in the Hegelian sense always implies an abstraction from the constitutive context of an entity, that is, an essential incompleteness and the often concomitant assumption of a monadic essence apart from that content, for instance, a real self behind mere roles, games, and so on. The individual abstracted from his social context, whose terms it needs to articulate or manifest itself, no longer stands in contradiction to the general, is no longer its negation, no longer stands in any necessary relation at all. As the individual can only articulate itself in collective objective terms, ignoring or denying those terms does not eliminate them, but only leaves them operative without modification by the individual. The old issue of individual spontaneity is a perfect case in point. Abstract opposed to society, insisting on our own essential real self that surfaces when uninhibited by thought and other, for example, social mediations, we would simply reproduce whatever we have been socialized into, which remains sedimented in our consciousness without conscious correctives. This is what we spontaneously reproduce when we retreat from consciously handling the terms in and under which we act. The individual, especially, is a product of the general, Adorno insisted. Mediated consciousness is not bad. Unreal consciousness, but the only consciousness available. The often indiscriminate rejection by the left of bourgeois subjectivism frequently fails to distinguish between abstracted, illusory, self-sufficient subjectivity, which is passive toward society, and a subjectivity which is an active form and function of determinate negation. Even a false consciousness may be a true consciousness in this sense and a harbinger of transcendence, a map of new territory where the distinction lies between these two kinds of subjectivity is not decided by fiat. 4. How desirable and intrinsically valuable individual preliminary stages may be, and what their historical importance is in relation to the idea of a realistic utopia. All this will be made clear only when the idea is brought to realization. Footnote 80, text. Page 398. 2. The most famous and more serious misunderstanding is Kierkegaard's misreading of Hegel's triad describing the movement of historical reality, thesis, antithesis, synthesis, and a simplistic formalization with which Hegel himself was rather unhappy and which Kierkegaard misunderstood as a compromise, a kind of middle ground between thesis and antithesis, aided probably by Hegel's use of the terms Vermittlung, mediation, and Versöhnung, reconciliation. Kierkegaard overlooked that mediation takes place in and through the extremes. Footnote 81, text. Of the theses and antitheses, and not as a simple give and take between the two. The new synthesis, therefore, is nothing but the new working constellation of the theses and antitheses, a new working reality, so to speak. This new synthesis, in turn, can become a thesis which engenders its own new antithesis, which may again lead to a new synthesis, and so on. 3. Probably the most widespread misunderstanding commonly found among traditional logicians refers to what is meant by the so-called dialectical contradiction itself, that is, thesis, antithesis. The traditional objection that two contradictory statements can never be true together, footnote 82, text, overextends the applicability of the principle of the excluded third. No one ever denied the validity of this principle with informal logic. But, like Hegel, the critical theorists took seriously the postulate of traditional logic that its rules do not necessarily coincide with those of empirical reality. Dialectical logic, which, according to Hegel, was to follow the movement of reality, was more comprehensive and could include traditional logic as one way of organizing reality. Albeit one those arbitrariness was not checked by any necessary relation of its inherent structure to its reference. The dialectical contradictions within empirical reality, the antithesis W-I, ich, negate the thesis, are not a matter of absolute existence or non-existence of a predicate. The dialectical contradiction of A is not non-A, but B, C, D, and so on, which in their attempt of self-assertion and self-realization are all fighting for the same historical space. Instead of assuming a complete package of predicates as either belonging or not belonging to the object, instead of assuming pure qualities as the fixed identity of an object, critical theorists assumed multiple modalities for any historical object, different parts of which are activated, repressed, or created in different and overlapping constellations. Page 399. Moreover, in the process of historical realization of such objects, this process being their only reality, Marcuse proposed, their identity, that is, their truth, was necessarily a matter of gradation, just as this truth had a necessary temporal dimension, as Aristotle had also insisted. Bloch at one point even spoke of gradation of reality in this respect. Also, we experience momentary stages of this process only. There is no need, also, an understandable pressure to reify this stage. In view of these reifications, theory must strive to dissolve the rigidity of the object fixated in the here and now, dissolve it into a field of the possible and the real. Footnote 83, text. Repeatedly, like the great philosophical traditions they invoked, critical theorists warned against the practice of defining statically an illusory isolated essence of which operational definitions are then but mere extensions, abstracted from the ongoing historical process. Though it be only the process of conceptual appropriations to check the arbitrariness of these definitions. Horkheimer advised that we should think of substantive opposites to clarify our working assumption rather than mere formal ones. For example, instead of the contradiction of straight versus non-straight, the contradiction of straight versus curved, straight versus interrupted, straight versus zigzag, instead of matter, non-matter, matter mind, matter antimatter, and so on, which are empirical negations. Which is the operative negation is likewise an empirical question and thus subject to continuous shifts. No single definition does justice to these overlapping empirical and perceptual modalities. No sum of them is omnipresent in each single context. Every predicate is a hypothesis deduced from our working reason. A mere definition reduces predicates to one frame of reference, that is, one modality, and thus does not define the multimodal object at all. Its truth. An interesting example of such a dialectical opposition where the true is the whole is the Copenhagen quantum interpretation asserting that certain elementary particles are simultaneously matter and waves, or that it is impossible to measure the speed and location of these particles at the same time. The Heisenberg interdeterminacy principle. These discoveries refer back, as Heisenberg suggested, to the constitutive function of perspective as an integral feature of the object. In the final analysis, the difference is between a formal and thus essential quantitative concept of contradiction and a substantive one, a distinction philosophers of science like Hempel readily admit. How form can be discussed without reference to the content of which it is the form remained mysterious to critical theorists. Page 400. But far from rejecting formal logic, a dialectical theory, true to its principles, will tend to retain the relative truth of particular positions and incorporate them into its own comprehensive theory. Footnote 84, text. The universalistic claims of formal logic, logical positivism, and logical empiricism, and by the same token, we might add, of the copy theory of perception caused some rather embarrassing problems. It proved difficult to demonstrate the connection between non-substantive, non-empirical categories and empirical reality in order to be more than an idiosyncrasy of pure logicians and methodologists. Formal logic and abstracted methodology had to imply tacitly a corresponding theory of truth, much as positivists denied it. They need to assume that the role operative in positive reality coincided with those of logic, and more specifically, those of deductive inference. Otherwise, it would be difficult to see why formal logic in abstracted methodology should be more than an internal matter of working techniques of a few scholars. Footnote 85, text. As Marcuse had once mused about the enterprise of the International Encyclopedia of Unified Science, founded by members of the Vienna Circle, who most emphatically proposed these positions. For all their justified critique of identity philosophy, that is to simplify the assumption of an identical structure of mind and matter, positivism Freud's affinity to this side of Hegel, his weakest, remained hidden from their view.